It's Thursday, the day we read from some of your comments. A line in our story about a plan to eliminate more than 3,500 payphones in Kentucky offended a number of listeners. The ubiquity of cellular phone service, our reporter said, is making payphones, quote, a bit like the redheaded stepchild of the communications industry.
Redhead Michael Coburn of Santa Clarita, California, writes, up until now, I had never taken the time to analyze or to be insulted by this phrase. Hearing it legitimized by use on such a respected show as ATC, he continues, gave me pause and pushed me to write in to say I didn't like it.
Melissa Block's interview with Jean Huffey, hostess of a caucus this week in Iowa, was a disappointment to some who felt it trivialized the event. This from Jonathan Arthur in Santa Monica, California. Could Block have been any more patronizing, or is it matronizing, as she asked about cookies, chairs, guest list sizes, and everything but anything substantive about the Iowa caucuses? One assumes that the Iowa woman is a caucus host because she is interested in and informed about American politics. Block managed to reduce her and herself to a Martha Stewart floor display.
And our report yesterday about Howard Dean's guttural exclamation in the wake of the Iowa caucuses left a lot to be desired in the opinion of Stan Bernstein. I'm a registered Democrat, he writes, but I have not yet decided which of the candidates I will support. I really need as much information as I can get on the different positions espoused by the candidates, and I look to you, NPR, to help me with that. I need content, not form. Your report was a waste of time. Please, when you report on the Democratic primaries, do not harp on polls or personal styles or anything else which is irrelevant. Similar sentiment from Jack Rochester of Brookline, Massachusetts. He wonders, what is all the brouhaha over Howard Dean's war whoop? The man showed some emotion. What's wrong with that? When I first heard it, I thought to myself, good for him. Dean was rallying his troops into battle, like any good commander would do.
And finally, our remembrance of the vanishing scent of cigarettes brought in many letters from people for whom the odor, though quite familiar, held no pleasant memories. Tony Butcher of West Lafayette, Indiana, remembers, the sharp scent of tobacco from a newly opened pack of cigarettes always reminds me of my father. The fit of coughing that followed the first inhaled smoke made me shudder with fear. Would Daddy choke and die? His death, at age 58, was from pancreatic cancer, known to be connected to smoking. In her 80s, my mother suffered from emphysema, although she had never smoked. Cigarette smoke is a fading aroma, with good reason, and nothing about it was glamorous.
But Rick Brooks in Holt, Michigan, was overcome with nostalgia. As much as I disliked my father's smoking, Mr. Brooks writes, I can recall with great clarity the smell of his cigarettes on icy cold winter air while he shoveled snow, on the rides home from basketball practice, and when he taught me how to ice fish, when it was just he and I. It now seems an odd shame that I live so far away and can't smell his smoke.
And memories of smoke prompted Mary Pryor of Moorhead, Minnesota, to send us this poem, written in June 1977.
Music photographed. Never shall music photograph so well those twilight dives where random spotlights stroke a glass, a watch band sequins, varnished grain, the fingers on the valves, the curve and swell of velvet throat, glissando, rasp, and choke when sound explores the many modes of pain. Whatever years of grace the players gain. Never shall music photograph so well as shaped and veiled by cerements of smoke.
Let us hear from you. Email us at atc@npr.org and be sure to let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.